the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, we're back again for the next installment of the Mississippi Rice Podcast. As always, I have with me Dr. Jason Bond and special guest today, Steve Martin. I don't know what your title is, but I know you're my boss. What's your official title?
I'm the Associate Director of the Mississippi State Extension Service for Agricultural and Natural Resources.
Isn't he like your boss's boss?
I think he's my boss's boss.
Yeah. It was dotted lines all over the place.
Or boss's boss.
Something like that.
Two or three levels.
But we're happy to have Steve in the studio with us today, making his podcast debut, and we're going to talk about a couple different things. First off, I think, what were you talking about, Jason? You wanted to talk a little bit about acreage and where we stand?
Yeah.
You talking about statewide crop acres?
Right. Well, you were talking about that acreage report, you know, when you walked in earlier, and that intrigued me.
Well, you know, those are always estimates that are sent in, and by the time it's published, you know, things have changed, especially on crops that we plant, you know, a little later in the year. We may plan on planting them earlier, but they can still be planted in May and June, July. But I think the interesting thing about it is, you know, on that report, you know, corn was down 30,000, cotton was down 70,000, peanuts down 14, different things there. The interesting thing really, though, just to summarize it, is that, you know, if you add up the numbers on that report, we're down about 100,000 acres, and I doubt there'll be 100,000 acres of cropland go idle this year. In fact, I know people are still planting even last week. So, you know, the question probably is where that 100,000 acres ends up and what that does to production and income within the state. You guys probably see as much of that as anybody. Where do you think the acreage is?
Well, it's not in rice, because I feel like that number that they put down for rice is probably about 15,000 to 20,000 acres, a little too high, based on what we've seen out in the world. What would you say, Jason?
Well, and I don't know how to drive around and, you know, guess acres. I mean, I can tell you what it looks like and what it feels like relative to last year. I feel like corn, you know, there's not as much corn out there.
You're in the South Delta.
Well, right. Depends on where you're standing. But I do, you know, in general, feel like there's not as much corn. Cotton feels like it's up. You know, and rice feels like 2017, I guess. You know, I don't know that we're all that different on rice acres than we were last year. And then, of course, soybeans just everywhere you look.
You know, I think rice moved around a little bit from 2017 this year. We're probably up about 18% to 20% in Bolivar County, but we've almost completely lost Sunflower County. You know, historical big rice acreage, at least 20,000 acres normally planted in Sunflower, and it's almost, I hate to say non-existent, but Sunflower's got an awful lot of beans in it.
Yeah.
If you think about, you know, what cotton prices have done over the, down a little bit right now, I guess maybe the tariff scare affected that like it has some of the other prices, but probably was due for a correction. Still very strong, so probably, you know, you would expect some cotton to have been planted a little later than people intended just because of the price. And then, of course, soybeans are a good crop to plant later. So, you know, if you're looking for where the acreage went, I mean, my thoughts would be some of it went into cotton and in the balance of that into soybeans.
And I think there was some cotton that, I mean, I don't keep up with, you know, planting, you know, like the agronomists do, but I feel like there was some cotton that went in late, you know, probably later than what people expected. And I had a couple of conversations about that specifically, and that may be where I'm gleaning that from, but I feel like there was some that went in later than usual.
Well, you know, we drove around the other day and saw some small cotton, but we also small cotton that was cutting out. So, you know, it was that early planted dry land cotton or something that the heat got to.
With a small wheat crop or basically no wheat crop, you know, we don't have that those double crop acres of soybeans that are, you know, filling the gaps a lot of times this time of year. So, that, you know, just wheat's just not been a player for us the last few years.
No, and, you know, for whatever it's worth, we did have a good wheat yield year this year. It was just on limited acreage.
On both acres, right.
On both acres.
Yeah.
was low. You mentioned something about the weather there. You know, we've been blessed. Last year had an excellent growing season rainfall. We also had an excellent harvest season in the fall of 16. If you're a row crop producer, if you were a cattle producer or maybe a vegetable, so even timber, it got pretty dry. And we're kind of setting up that pattern this year. You know, some people are getting good rains and, you know, irrigated acres that haven't had the run to water a lot. The other parts of the state, the southwest corner of the state, some crops down there, and certainly a lot of livestock. They're at a second stage. I forget, it gets the drought monitor, starts out at abnormally dry and then slight risk of drought. And even over in Noxby County, which is a major row crop producing part of the state as well, it's dry over there. So we're at a time of the year where if we get some rains, that things could still be really good. But if we don't get them pretty quick, you know, people will start seeing some type of yield decline, just depending on how bad it is. You know, you mentioned some cotton that was cutting out, so that's certainly obviously a chance of it didn't get the water it needed.
Yeah, that cotton we saw did seem really early to see those blooms that high in the plant this time of year. But we don't know anything about the management there to know why that was happening.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you look at the Delta weather over the last month and a half, if you're in Indianola, you caught a rain almost every week. So.
Right. Well, you almost wanted to slack off a little bit at times. I mean, they were catching rains multiple times a week, and then we went here for several weeks with no rain.
Yeah, I know. Once we started flooding rice, we've really not turned the wells off. So, you know, that affects a lot of things, affects a lot of people's temperament when you're running around chasing polypipe all summer. And it's, I wouldn't say been abnormally hot, but it's been hot for extended periods of time.
Well, we went from winter to summer overnight, into April, it was still cold. And then you turned around and it seemed like, you know, the next Monday it was, you were sweating, and then it hadn't let up since.
Yeah, not that hot for Mississippi. It was just a little earlier than we normally
get.
June was hot.
That's right. We haven't had, you know, 100-degree days. Now, I will say, you know, in my truck this morning, is accurate meteorology, but it was 80-plus at 6 o'clock this morning, you know, which gets into some problems later on in the year when our crops get into reproduction.
Well, we were in the rice field real early this morning, and the humidity was killer, you know, prior to 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
But that leads us to, I guess, what Steve's over here for today, and we'll get him to talk a little bit about that. But we've got an excellent opportunity this afternoon, many of the scientists here at Stoneville, to talk to the Farm Bureau's Young Farmer and Ranchers Group. And many of us did that multiple times. I did it back in the fall down in Biloxi at their annual meeting. But today they're in the Delta and they're going to tour Stoneville. And we're happy to have that leadership group here. So, Steve, tell us a little bit about what y'all have planned with that group today.
Well, this, Farm Bureau's Young Farmer Program is open to anyone that's interested. But this is their board of directors. So they have 16 board members. You know, they rotate off, and today is kind of the time where they swap over. So they've actually got 24, the current 16, and then the 8 that'll be coming on for this next year. And they usually have a summer conference. It's been held in Starkville and in different places around the state. Came to Stoneville to do it this year. And so they're here to just within Farm Bureau to receive some training on how they run their program and some leadership stuff within Farm Bureau. And then scientists with Mississippi State today are going to give some different updates and seminars on different crops, ranging from timber and poultry to beef cattle to rice and cotton in our major row crops. So kind of gear the presentations to the group of young farmers that Farm Bureau has on their committee. So as that rotates over time, we kind of adjust our speakers, folks like the two of you, Bobby and Jason and others, to tailor that to what those guys and ladies produce on their farms. So that's what they're here for.
All right, guys. Well, while Steve was on that monologue telling us about what we're going to talk about with Farm Bureau today, I looked up and noticed Mr. Mike McCormick walking down the hall, and we grabbed him and got him here in the room. So, Dr. Martin, would you do the honors of introducing?
Be glad to. You know, we have a really good relationship with Farm Bureau and Mr. McCormick, and so while he was here, we thought we'd get him on, as part of this podcast. Your ratings ought to go up really good after this. So, Mr. McCormick, Mike McCormick, our president of Mississippi Farm Bureau, is with us, and so we'll let him talk a little bit about what's going on here today and anything with Farm Bureau that he'd like to talk about.
Thank you, Dr. Martin. It's a pleasure to be here. I always enjoy getting to Stoneville to DREC and looking at the crops up this way and see what research is doing to help our farmers. We have our Young Farmer and Rancher Leadership Committee here with us today. They do one of these meetings every year, just the officer group, and they get together. Last year we did it on campus at Mississippi State, and I think maybe the year before that it was there as well. But this group wanted to come over to Stoneville. There's some row crop farmers from the area that's on the committee, the leadership, that wanted to get everybody over here and let them look and see what's going on. So they just walked in. I think they've had some meetings this morning to elect some new officers for next year that'll provide the leadership and the direction that the YF&R committee will go in for the next 12 months. So proud to be here, and thanks for the invitation to be on your podcast.
Definitely, Mike, and I appreciate the invitation to come speak this fall or winter, I guess, in Biloxi. I really enjoyed that, and we had a lot of great interaction with this young farmer group. These are our future leaders, and y'all are doing a really good job, I think, in aiding, getting young guys into, I hate to say, the politics of farming at an early age. And can you talk a little bit about how you target, or do you target, or do they come to you? How do you get hooked up? If you want to be in the Young Farmer and Rancher program, how do I get into that if I'm a young farmer in Mississippi?
Go by your local county Farm Bureau office, and the people there can put you in touch with the regional manager that for us that covers that county. We have eight of them that cover about 10 counties apiece, and they're the ones that are responsible for letting everybody know the age requirements and some of the things that we do and getting them involved with the program. We had a great conference that you were talking about down on the coast. I guess we had about 200 couples there. Thought it was well attended, and the program was outstanding. Senator Wicker was there, and they got a chance to interact with him and a lot of other good speakers. Our intentions for this program is, number one, to build future leadership for Farm Bureau and to let them know how important it is to be an advocate for what they do. I truly believe that in the future, just as they get up in the morning and decide what corn or soybean varieties that they're going to put in their planters or what they're going to do for that day, they're going to have to get on social media or call their representatives or senators in D.C. and say, hey, this issue is going on, and we just want you to know where we're going to be. Farm Bureau and other organizations like us can carry the heavy lift for them on a daily basis, but it's important for them to understand that they have a role in this. And me as an older guy, I can go up and talk to somebody in D.C., but when you have that young family there that's future is ahead of them with small kids, that's what resonates well with the people in D.C. and the people at the Capitol in Washington. So we try to give our young farmer and rancher guys an education on how to go about that, how to be effective with that. But we also try to let them get out and meet and mingle with people that do things around the state similarly to what they do on their farms, and maybe some that do things quite differently. I think with our program, it's probably the only one that you'll see a poultry producer in Rankin County become best friends with a row crop farmer that's growing corn and soybeans here in Bolivar County in the Delta, and we've got some of that going on. They'll make lifelong friends that they'll have for forever. And they understand how we're all integrated in this thing together, why the production of corn in the Delta is so important to being able to make a living as a poultry guy in Rankin County.
Well, you know, I guess as we progress as a society and we move further and further away from the farm, teaching guys in this age group that they have a voice and it matters, and it's going to matter even more in the future as multiple generations get further and further away from the farm, I applaud what y'all guys are doing.
Well, thank you. We're down to about 1% now of the population that that farm. They've got to have a collective voice. So with Farm Bureau, we can give them that. We can give them a seat at the table. I was always told that the world's run by people that choose to take a seat at the table. And these young people that are here today, they did that. And we're going to give them the skills and the ability to have a collective voice and make a difference.
Thanks, Ms. McCormick. We appreciate all the input. Glad y'all chose to come here. And we always appreciate the partnership with Farm Bureau of Mississippi State.
Well, thank you again for having us, Dr. Martin. We'll be back here in a few more weeks in August for our State Board of Directors meeting here. So we're proud of our connection with Mississippi State. I don't know that maybe some of your listeners realize that one of my charges and one of my most important jobs that I do every year is going to the Capitol to advocate for the budgets for Mississippi State, for you guys and that do the work and for our farmers in the field. Our organization was set up basically by extension agents because they knew that they had the expertise and of the scientific ability to work on the issues that are important for the farmers in the field, but somebody had to be the voice for them for legislative matters and for Mississippi State. So we're proud of that connection, and we fight hard for you guys.
Well, we definitely appreciate that on that level, you know, advocating on our behalf with the legislature, but then too, like in the case of Bobby and I, on our level, we appreciate the relationship we have with your guy, you know, your Farm Bureau reps in the different areas and the commodity reps. So we think we have a really close relationship with those guys and interact with them routinely.
Yeah, they enjoy working with you, Jason. And we were in D.C., Justin Ferguson, one of the guys you're talking about, and I were in D.C. all this week, and we met with regulators and politicians, and we're just glad to be part of the team.
Well, if there's anything we can do for you, know we're just a phone call away, and we do appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to sit in here with us for a moment and give us a update about where y'all are at and what you're doing right now. I think this program is one of the best things that I've seen. Like I said, that really opened my eyes when I was asked to come down to Biloxi. I guess I didn't realize how big the program had gotten. You know, you always hear about it, but man, it's huge.
When I started, this is my going almost fourth year as president. We'd fallen on some hard times. So we redirected it, got Samantha involved with it, and she, along with the other regional managers, I charged them with revitalizing this because it's the future of our organization, but it's the future of the state as well. And we're going to continue to try to build it and make it better next year than it was this year. And the whole key is the leadership group, the ones that are these kids that are here today, because they'll set the course for next year. And my challenge to them in a little bit is we did great things this year. What can we do better next year?
Mike, we sincerely appreciate you stopping by and visiting with us today. And we know your time is extremely valuable. Is there anything else you want to leave with us as we wrap up?
Well, we're working hard for the farmers. It's tough times in D.C. right now. We've got some trade issues going on, and Farm Bureau's working hard on those. We've never been more connected to administration as we are today, but it's difficult right now in the spot that we're in. Our message has been that we want trade and not aid. I think we'll see something on the aid side of things by Labor Day. That's what we were told this week. As far as what may be coming out to help the farmers through this tight spot. But we've got to get some fires put out. We've set a lot out, and they're raging right now, and we need some winds, and we need to get some of these fires put out. So that's what we got a chance this week before lunch to meet with Ambassador Dodd, the trade ambassador. We met with Undersecretary McKinney, I had a visit from Chairman Pat Roberts talking about the Farm Bill. So everybody's on the same page. We just got to try to work on putting some of these fires out.
And y'all have done good, as well as organizations like you, in putting fires out in the past.
They absolutely have, Bobby. Farm Bureau has a long track record of advocating on behalf of farmers, and yeah, I don't think anybody can argue with the success that they've had over the years in doing just that.
And we know y'all are at bat for us, and in the future, y'all get it straightened out. Y'all got a big voice.
Well, I appreciate being here, and I thank y'all for all the work y'all do for our farmers.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick, and we'll see you a little later when we go to talk.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. We really appreciate your time and talking with us today, and also Dr. Martin. We know you're a really busy man as well, so we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. So we're going to jump off here, guys, and go on with our meeting. But as always, if we can do anything for you, just give us a call, and we'll get to you just as soon as we can.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.